Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Volunteers provide decades of service to hospital. They may be 90 and above, but Joe Baker, Faye Smith, Helen Jones, and Mary McQueen are volunteer powerhouses for Medical Center Hospital. Jones started volunteering in 2004. McQueen has been giving of her time for 30 years, Smith for 22 years, and Baker for 28 years in October. The women began giving of their time for various reasons and have stuck with it because of the people they meet, those around them, and the sense of purpose it gives them. Smith, who is 90, moved to Odessa in 1964. She was a homemaker and started volunteering in 2002 after her husband passed away. He had spent 16 months in the hospital over a two-year period, so the hospital staff became her family. She started in the gift and coffee shop until it closed, then helped in the cath lab waiting room, Wheatley Stewart pre-op desk, patient services, popcorn, and currently works in the ICU surgery waiting room and at the front reception desk. She is also a former auxiliary board member. She volunteers Monday through Friday every week. Everybody treated us so good, and so I decided I could do something to help the hospital, Smith said. Jones, 91, moved to Odessa in 1957 and just retired from Ector County ISD School Nutrition in 2020. She started volunteering in 2004 after she and her pastor visited patients in hospital. She delivered magazines and flowers to patients first. She has also volunteered at Wheatley Stewart and currently in the ICU surgery waiting room. I thought it was a nice thing to do, so I've been volunteering ever since, Jones said. McQueen, 93, moved to Odessa in 1952 and had a daycare business. She joined the auxiliary in 1993 after a friend invited her and started as escort transporter for hospital and currently at Wheatley Stewart pre-op lab. She also volunteered at the front desk briefly and the gift and coffee shop. McQueen said she just likes people, and she had a friend that volunteered a long time ago when they wore pink pinafores. I just thought it was really neat, and she enjoyed it, so I thought I'd enjoy that too, she added. Baker, 90, moved to Odessa in March of 1956 from the Hill Country. I started volunteering at Medical Center after retirement from City of Odessa. This was October 1996. Even before retiring, I always planned on volunteering at Medical Center. At one time, the auxiliary had a line dance group I wanted to join. They disbanded before I retired, but I still wanted to volunteer to be useful and maybe help someone else, she said. Baker said she will keep volunteering as long as she's able. I enjoy meeting other people and makes me feel useful and needed. Besides reception and ICU surgery waiting room for a short time, I worked at what was called patient services, she said. Jones said she loves talking to the patients in the ICU waiting room, and she's made many friends, which is what keeps her coming back. McQueen said she enjoys all the people at the hospital. They're very special, she added. Baker said she enjoys being useful. It makes you feel good if you can help someone, and so that's why I enjoy it. I work at the reception desk and ICU and surgery waiting rooms also, Baker said. Local news roundup. Couple arrested on family violence charges. An Odessa couple was arrested on Friday night after each accused the other of domestic violence. According to an Odessa Police Department report, officers learned of an assault on North Tom Green Avenue around 8:30 p.m. Friday and met Sarah Porter, 32, and Kit Horney Porter, 31, at Medical Center Hospital. Kit Horney Porter said that during an argument over his wife's infidelity, his wife punched and choked him while he was in bed. According to the report, Porter said his wife eventually lunged at him with a dagger, stabbing his arm while trying to stab his neck. He also said she bit his forearm while he was trying to protect himself. Officers found a fresh bite mark on the man's arm and a small laceration on a wrist, the report stated. Sarah Porter told officers her husband grabbed her by the throat and choked her during an argument, but she denied stabbing him, the report stated. Officers found a dagger in the house, according to the report. The report stated officers were unable to determine the main aggressor, so they arrested both. Sarah Porter was arrested on suspicion of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon, a second-degree felony. Kidhorny Porter was arrested on suspicion of assault by strangulation, a third-degree felony. She was released Monday after posting a $25,000 surety bond. He remained in custody Tuesday on a $20,000 surety bond. Argument involving brick leads to arrest. A 38-year-old Odessa woman was arrested last Thursday morning after her common-law husband told police she hit him in the head with a brick. According to the Odessa Police Department, the 52-year-old man called 911 from the La Casa Bonita apartments on East 52nd Street around 10:15 a.m. When police arrived, the man said Passion Strong hit him with a brick after he'd experienced some car troubles near the Sahara Motel on East 2nd Street, and Strong began arguing with him over money, the report stated. Police saw the man had a laceration on the right side of his face and bloody clothing, the report stated. Strong told officers they had begun arguing because her husband had taken her gun without permission, according to the report, she said. Odessian being held on drug charges. An Odessa man was arrested on a felony drug warrant Thursday. According to an Odessa Police Department report, detectives with the Midland-Odessa Violent Crimes Task Force received a tip Haman Shavon Davis was selling large quantities of cocaine from his house on West 39th Street. Detectives arranged for a confidential informant to buy cocaine from Davis, provided him with a live-streaming recording device, and watched and listened to him buy 115 grams of cocaine from Davis on March the 5th. A warrant was sought for Davis for manufacture/delivery of a controlled substance, a first-degree felony, and Davis was arrested on that warrant Thursday night. Ector County court records show Davis is also being held on a second count of manufacture/delivery of a controlled substance. He's being held on a U.S. Marshal hold and surety bonds totaling $150,000. Medical Center Health System 75th Anniversary Kickoff. MCH will celebrate its 75th anniversary with the first ever MCH Diamond Dash Fun Run as part of the First Friday ODTX series. Registration for the 2K Fun Run is only $10. Each runner will receive a free t-shirt. Register at bit.ly/MCH Fun Run May 24. The day begins at 6 p.m. MCH will host a free concert featuring Brian Milson, followed by the Barn Hearts out of Lubbock. The concert will be in the MCH parking lot at 3rd and Allegheny. Concert goers are invited to bring lawn chairs and enjoy music and dancing. Parking will be available in the MCH parking garage and the MCH lot at 2nd and Golder. Meals on Wheels to launch Silver Pantry. Meals on Wheels of Odessa is excited to announce Silver Pantry, an exclusive resource for Meals on Wheels of Odessa clients. May is Older Americans Month, and to kick off this month-long celebration of their clients, Meals on Wheels of Odessa is creating the Silver Pantry in partnership with the Junior League of Odessa. The Silver Pantry idea grew from the league's Pink Pantry, which provides period supplies to young women of school age. When approached about a potential donation, Executive Director of Meals on Wheels of Odessa, Craig Stoker, said, We have clients who reach out from time to time needing things like adult nutritional drinks and incontinence supplies. The league had already set an amazing example with the Pink Pantry, and I thought it would be a great idea to replicate the pantry idea for the older Odessans being served through the Meals on Wheels programs. According to a news release, the Silver Pantry will serve clients who are enrolled to receive services from Meals on Wheels of Odessa and will be stocked with the help of Meals on Wheels grocery supply partner in this endeavor, HEB products. Available to clients will include HEB branded adult nutritional drinks, incontinence supplies, oral hygiene supplies, and home cleaning supplies. The Silver Pantry is designed to help our clients who have immediate needs, such as needing supplemental nutritional drinks, Stoker said in the release. Insure maker Abbott Nutrition has a program to cover the cost of their Insure line of products, but the application is not simple and requires a doctor to sign off. The Silver Pantry will allow our clients to receive products while the paperwork is completed. Just because a giant corporation has a lot of red tape doesn't mean our clients should suffer, and I am grateful to the Junior League of Odessa and HEB for making the Silver Pantry a reality. Meals on Wheels of Odessa, 1314 East 5th Street, is scheduled to open the Junior League of Odessa Silver Pantry at 10:30 a.m. May the 9th. Obituaries. Billy James Avery, age 82, passed away on April the 26th. Funeral services will take place at 2 p.m. on Friday, May the 3rd, at the First Free Will Baptist Church in Bowie. Burial will follow at Solona Cemetery in Bowie. Terry Ann Connor passed away on April the 28th. Funeral service will be held at 10 a.m. Thursday, May the 2nd, at Sunset Memorial Funeral Home. Gary Dean Edmiston, age 84 of Odessa, passed away on April the 26th. Funeral services will be held at Sunset Memorial Gardens on Wednesday, May the 1st at 10 a.m. Charlie Hollis Grantham, age 102, and a longtime resident of Odessa, passed away on April the 23rd. Funeral services will be held May the 4th at 10 a.m. at Belmont Baptist Church. Joe Lynn Siebenor passed away on April the 26th. A viewing will be held Friday, May the 3rd, from 1 p.m. to 8 p.m. at Hartley Funeral Home. The family will be present from 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. A celebration of Joe Lynn's life will be held Saturday, May the 4th, at 10 a.m. at the Ward County Events Center. Interment is to follow at Tamarisk Cemetery in Grand Falls, Texas. Aurora Del Bosque, age 92 of Odessa, died Saturday, April the 27th. Funeral service will be held at 1 p.m. May the 1st at Life Unlimited Church in Odessa. Burial will follow at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Judith Ann Polk, age 77 of Odessa, died Friday, April the 26th. No services have been scheduled and arrangements will be by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. Kenneth Ray Roscoe Ensembe, age 59, died Thursday, April the 25th in Little River at his home. Services are pending with Dossman Funeral Home of Belton, Texas. Floyd Poe of Colorado Springs, age 82, passed away peacefully on April the 3rd in Colorado. Memorial service will be held at 11 a.m. Saturday, May the 4th at the Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home Chapel in Midland. Mary Lou Wolf, age 90 of Odessa, passed away on April the 28th. A celebration of life will be held at 2 p.m. Saturday, June the 1st at Hubbard Kelly Funeral Home. Visitation will be Friday, May the 3rd from 5 to 7 p.m. at Hubbard Kelly Funeral Home in Odessa. A brief interment service will be held at the Hamlin Memorial Cemetery at 1 p.m. on Saturday, May the 4th. Quick hits. Early voting. Early voting for Ector County primary runoff election begins on Monday, May the 20th, and ends on Friday, May the 24th. Voters are welcome to call the elections office for location information at 432-498-4030. You may also visit the webpage for the early voting schedules, election day vote centers, and sample ballots. To be eligible to vote in the primary runoff election on Tuesday, May the 28th, you must be a registered voter. Student wins WNPAC window. Having learned to believe in herself and not give up, Jacqueline Vickers wants to pass that message on to others. Vickers is the winner of the Wagner Noel Performing Arts Center Window Art Contest. Her work is a digital art piece that's representative of West Texas with a pump jack, a full moon, and a wild-looking sky. An art major at University of Texas Permian Basin, Vickers said she decided to enter the contest because $100 sounded really nice. College is expensive. I work summers, so whatever I save up goes towards it, Vickers said. She added that she kept getting emails about the contest. Putting her art out there was a big deal to Vickers. She said she has about 2,000 pieces that no one has seen. I don't think I'm worth it. That's the truth, she said. To me, they're just random doodles. She found out she'd won the window art contest when someone came into her classroom at the Charles A. Sorber Visual Arts Studios with only the back of the framed work showing. I told myself there was no way, Vickers said. She recognized a corner piece of it, but still thought it had to be a joke or a prank. There are so many great artists here in Odessa that are known for their murals, and little old me, who joined, Vickers said. She had six other versions of the piece. In addition to digital, she does traditional, scratch art, whatever I can get my hands on. Vicker was born and raised in Gardendale and has two brothers and one sister. She said winning the window art contest gave her a sign. She had been asking God if she was on the right path. This was a big slap in the face to tell me you are on the right path and believe in yourself, Vicker said. For college, she was awarded chances to go to other colleges, but she chose UTPB. I've learned a lot and I'm doing stuff I didn't think I could do, Vicker said. The Wagner Noel is now working with a local company to digitize the artwork, and it will be printed as a window wrap.
This is Melissa, and I'll be reading Permian Proud. Cowboys legend rolls up sleeves for youth-led project in Midland. April 30th, 2024, by Jonathan Harshman. Dallas Cowboys legend Darren Woodson and Cowboys cheerleaders Leah and Kylie joined a youth-led effort to provide much-needed upgrades to the Midland Children Rehab Center's MCRC equine facility. But the brightest stars on April 19th were members of the Young Women's Leadership Academy, YWLA, students in philanthropy team, which not only came up with the idea for the community service project, but also successfully advocated to get it funded. Led by YWLA students Maria Garcia and Grace Muscroft, the youth group formulated a budget and a service plan and visited the site during the planning stages. YWLA students then submitted their proposal to the Cowboys Community Captain Competition, a new partnership among Chevron, the Cowboys, and the Abel Hanger Foundation that provides a $10,000 grant from Chevron for the project selected as most impactful from among several worthwhile projects developed by youth SIP programs in collaboration with local community organizations. The YWLA team was one of five student teams from Midland and Odessa whose proposal advanced to the finals of the competition. In November, the student finalists pitched their proposals to a panel of judges from the Cowboys, Chevron, and Abel Hanger Foundation at the Star in Frisco. Earlier this year, Woodson informed the YWLA team via a video message that it had won $10,000 in funding for their project. On April 19th, Woodson and the cheerleaders joined students from YWLA and other local schools' SIP teams, school officials, MCRC staff, Chevron employees, and other community partners to carry out the project, which included upgrades like a fresh coat of paint on their barn fence. Leadership through community service is one of our pillars, and we are so grateful for everyone who showed up, from school board members to advisory council members to our fellow SIP chapters, even the Dallas Cowboy cheerleaders, the YWLA posted on Facebook. MCRC thanked the students and commended the Dallas Cowboys Community Captain Initiative for encouraging teamwork between students and local nonprofits to benefit the community. The horses were specifically grateful for the upgrades to the facilities, MCRC officials stated. In an interview with News West 9, Marina Garcia, YWLA junior and community co-captain, said her team's motivation in the project was to support the kids that MCRC serves. Chevron is proud to partner with these outstanding organizations, students, and community members to help MCRC. Our volunteers had a memorable experience supporting a meaningful cause. Listen to this story at 2 p.m. daily via the Recording Library of West Texas. This is Melissa, and I'm reading Permian Proud today, 5/1/2024. 43 outstanding teachers taken out to the ball game. April 30th, 2024, by Staff Report. The stars of the game at Momentum Baseball Park on Monday were in the stands as well as on the field. Every spring, each ECISD school selects an outstanding teacher. On Monday, those 43 educators were celebrated with a picnic at the Midland Rockhounds baseball game. They were treated to a sunny, breezy afternoon and an exciting game that ended in 10 innings. The Rockhounds lost 8-5 to Corpus Christi. The Outstanding Teacher Program recognizes educators who positively impact student performance and who excel in professionalism, service, and leadership to the school, the district, and the community. The list of the spring's outstanding teachers follows: Carver, EEC, Joanna Sotelo; Lamar, EEC, Brooklyn, Aries; Alamo STEM Academy, Christina Carrasco; Austin Montessori, Larissa Andis; Blackshear Elementary, Dave Machuca; Blanton Elementary, Kaylin Webster; Bice Elementary, Teresa Izagiri; Burleson Elementary, Diana Richardson; Burnett Elementary, Melissa Johnson; Cameron Dual Language, Lisette Ray; Cavazos Elementary, Sylvia Ponce; Dowling Elementary, Joe Muniz; E.K. Downing Elementary, Maria Chacon; Fly Elementary, Sylvia Feel; Goliad Elementary, Neftalia Salgado; Gonzalez Elementary, Candace Rago; Hayes STEM Academy, Ashley Rojo; Ireland Elementary, Narita Nieto; Johnson Elementary, Pamela Templin; Jordan Elementary, Norma Zapata. Milam Fine Arts Academy, Gabriela Luna. Noel Elementary, Dana Batten. Pease Elementary, Jaislyn Perrin. Reagan Elementary, Michael Neiman. Ross Elementary, Jenica Maurice Magno. Sam Houston Elementary, Janet Juarez. San Jacinto Elementary, Carla Ronquillo. Travis Elementary, Mary Ramos. West Elementary, Gabrielle Mendez. Zavala Elementary, Cora Mapp. Bonham Middle School, Samantha Baker. Bowie Middle School, Jackie Martinez. Crockett Middle School, Dominique Avila. Nimitz Middle School, Nilda Lucas. Wilson and Young Medal of Honor Middle School, Crystal Mino. Career and Technical Education, Cynthia Alcorn. George H.W. Bush New Tech Odessa, Joano Biscano. OC Techs, Jalen Ballard. Odessa Collegiate Academy, ECHS, Brandon Cook. Odessa High School, Stephanie Marin. Permian High School, Michael Flax. STEM Academy, Carrie Grandenbar. Alternative Education Center, Jonathan Litford. Listen to this story at 2 p.m. daily via the Recording Library of West Texas.
This is the Midland Reporter Telegram Health and Wellness for Wednesday, May 1st, 2024. Guest column. A non-opioid pain treatment is available. According to the CDC, the number of people who died from a drug overdose in 2021 was over six times the number of people in 1999. Over 75% of the nearly 107,000 drug overdose deaths in 2021 involved an opioid. Our nation is in the middle of an unprecedented opioid epidemic. The Health Resources and Services Administration reported that more than 130 people a day die from an opioid-related drug overdose. One way we can stop this epidemic is by reducing the need for pain medication after surgery. West Texas Orthopedics is the first in the area to offer Iovera treatment to assist in chronic knee pain and post-op pain control for patients undergoing total knee replacement. Iovera is a non-opioid procedure utilizing cold to block peripheral nerve receptors that would cause pain. It is clinically proven to provide relief for up to 90 days after the procedure. For patients scheduled to undergo a total knee replacement, Iovera is performed 3 weeks before surgery. Patients report less pain after the procedure and require less pain medication. Along with a decrease in postoperative pain, patients who have had Iovera before surgery have an increase in their functional outcomes and are overall more pleased with their recovery. Iovera can also be utilized as an alternative for treatment for treating chronic knee pain related to osteoarthritis. It can be performed every 90 days if needed. It can be used with other treatments such as corticosteroid injections to control pain. The procedure takes about 30 to 45 minutes and is completed in the office. It does not require an IV or any sedation. Iovera blocks the peripheral nerves without affecting function, allowing patients to drive themselves after the procedure, and there are no restrictions once Iovera has been completed. Patients who are interested in Iovera should schedule an appointment with West Texas Orthopedics for evaluation. Mayo Clinic News. What do you know about malaria? Malaria is caused by a single-celled parasite of the genus Plasmodium. The parasite is transmitted to humans most commonly through mosquito bites. The malaria parasites enter the bloodstream and travel to the liver. When the parasites mature, they leave the liver and infect red blood cells. This is when people typically develop malaria symptoms. Because The parasites that cause malaria affect red blood cells. People also can be infected by exposure to infected blood, including from mother to unborn child, through blood transfusions, and by sharing needles used to inject drugs. Each year, nearly 290 million people are infected with malaria, and more than 400,000 people die of the disease. The greatest risk factor for developing malaria is to live in or visit areas where the disease is common. These areas include tropical and subtropical regions of sub-Saharan Africa, South and Southeast Asia, the Pacific Islands, Central America, and Northern South America. The degree of risk depends on local malaria control, seasonal changes in malaria rates, and the precautions you take to prevent mosquito bites. Symptoms of malaria. Signs and symptoms of malaria typically begin within a few weeks after being bitten by an infected mosquito. However, some types of malaria parasites can lie dormant in your body for up to a year. Some people who have malaria experiences cycles of malaria, quote, attacks, end quote. An attack usually starts with shivering and chills, followed by a high fever, then sweating, and finally a return to normal temperature. Signs and symptoms of malaria can include fever, chills, general feeling of discomfort, headache, nausea and vomiting, diarrhea, abdominal pain, muscle or joint pain, fatigue, rapid breathing, rapid heart rate, cough. Treatment and prevention. Malaria is treated with prescription drugs to kill the parasite. The types of drugs and the length of treatment will depend on the type of malaria parasite you have, the severity of your symptoms, your age, and whether you're pregnant. To reduce malaria infections, World Health programs distribute preventative drugs and insecticide-treated bed nets to protect people from mosquito bites. Protective clothing, bed nets, and insecticides can protect you while traveling. You also can take preventative medicine before, during, and after a trip to a high-risk area. In 2021, the World Health Organization recommended widespread use of a new malaria vaccine for children. WHO Director General Drs. Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus called the long-awaited vaccine a, quote, breakthrough for science, child health, and malaria control, end quote, and said that when combined with existing tools to prevent malaria, tens of thousands of children could be saved each year. COM Aquatics to host annual water walk. In support of the 60 million people living with arthritis, COM Aquatics will be hosting its fourth annual water walk to cure arthritis on Saturday, May 11th. This event kicks off the COM Community Week promotion. Participants can choose to take a walk at the park, water walk, or swim laps independently to meet their goal of moving for 60 minutes. Just commit to move. Participants can join any of the Let's Move Challenge events. 8 o'clock a.m. Arthritis Walk at Woodlands Park. Meet at M7 COM Entrance. 8:30 a.m. Arthritis Class at Wellness Pool. 9 o'clock a.m. Lap Swim at Maybe Pool. A COM membership is not required to join Team Wavemakers. Simply purchase the $10 one-day event pass to water walk or swim laps. For more information or to donate, visit events.arthritis.org/team/teamwavemakers or email rsimmons@comaquatics.com. Mammograms. Panel. Mammograms should start at 40. Regular mammograms to screen for breast cancer should start younger, at age 40, according to an influential U.S. task force. Women ages 40 to 74 should get screened every other year, the group said. Previously, the task force had said women could choose to start breast cancer screening as young as 40, with a stronger recommendation that they get the exams every 2 years from age 50 through 74. The announcement Tuesday from the U.S. Preventive Services Task Force makes official a draft recommendation announced last year. The recommendations were published in the Journal of the American Medical Association. Quote, it's a win that they are now recognizing the benefits of screening women in their 40s, end quote, said Dr. Therese Beavers of MD Anderson Cancer Center in Houston. She was not involved in the guidance. Other medical groups, including the American College of Radiology and the American Cancer Society, suggest mammograms every year instead of every other year, starting at age 40 or 45, which may cause confusion, Beaver said, but, quote, now the starting age will align with what many other organizations are saying, end quote. Breast cancer death rates have fallen as treatment continues to improve, but breast cancer is still the second most common cause of cancer death for U.S. women. About 240,000 cases are diagnosed annually, and nearly 43,000 women die from breast cancer. The nudge toward earlier screening is meant to address two vexing issues: the increasing incidence of breast cancer among women in their 40s, it's risen 2% annually since 2015, and the higher breast cancer death rate among Black women compared to white women, said Task Force Vice Chair Dr. John Wong of Tufts Medical Center in Boston. When should I get my first mammogram? Age 40 is when mammograms should start for women, transgender men, and non-binary people at average risk. They should have the X-ray exam every other year, according to the new guidance. Other groups recommend annual mammograms starting at 40 or 45. The advice does not apply to women who've had breast cancer or those at very high risk of breast cancer because of genetic markers. It also does not apply to women who had high-dose radiation therapy to the chest when they were young or to women who've had a lesion on previous biopsies. What about women 75 and older? It's not clear whether older women should continue getting regular mammograms. Studies rarely include women 75 and older, so the task force is calling for more research. What about women with dense breasts? Mammograms don't work as well for women with dense breasts, but they should still get the exams. The task force would like to see more evidence about additional tests such as ultrasounds or MRIs for women with dense breasts. It's not yet clear whether those types of tests would help to detect cancer at an earlier, more treatable stage, Wong said. Mammograms. Panel. Mammograms should start at 40. Regular mammograms to screen for breast cancer should start younger, at age 40, according to an influential U.S. task force. Women ages 40 to 74 should get screened every other year, the group said. Previously, the task force had said women could choose to start breast cancer screening as young as 40, with a stronger recommendation that they get the exams every 2 years from age 50 through 74. The announcement Tuesday from the U.S. Preventive Services Task Force makes official a draft recommendation announced last year. The recommendations were published in the Journal of the American Medical Association. Quote, it's a win that they are now recognizing the benefits of screening women in their 40s, end quote, said Dr. Therese Beavers of MD Anderson Cancer Center in Houston. She was not involved in the guidance. Other medical groups, including the American College of Radiology and the American Cancer Society, suggest mammograms every year instead of every other year, starting at age 40 or 45, which may cause confusion, Beaver said, but, quote, now the starting age will align with what many other organizations are saying, end quote. Breast cancer death rates have fallen as treatment continues to improve, but breast cancer is still the second most common cause of cancer death for U.S. women. About 240,000 cases are diagnosed annually, and nearly 43,000 women die from breast cancer. The nudge toward earlier screening is meant to address two vexing issues: the increasing incidence of breast cancer among women in their 40s, it's risen 2% annually since 2015, and the higher breast cancer death rate among Black women compared to white women, said Task Force Vice Chair Dr. John Wong of Tufts Medical Center in Boston. When should I get my first mammogram? Age 40 is when mammograms should start for women, transgender men, and non-binary people at average risk. They should have the X-ray exam every other year, according to the new guidance. Other groups recommend annual mammograms starting at 40 or 45. The advice does not apply to women who've had breast cancer or those at very high risk of breast cancer because of genetic markers. It also does not apply to women who had high-dose radiation therapy to the chest when they were young or to women who've had a lesion on previous biopsies. What about women 75 and older? It's not clear whether older women should continue getting regular mammograms. Studies rarely include women 75 and older, so the task force is calling for more research. What about women with dense breasts? Mammograms don't work as well for women with dense breasts, but they should still get the exams. The task force would like to see more evidence about additional tests such as ultrasounds or MRIs for women with dense breasts. It's not yet clear whether those types of tests would help to detect cancer at an earlier, more treatable stage, Wong said. Drug policy. U.S. looks to reclassify marijuana. The U.S. Drug Enforcement Administration will move to reclassify marijuana as a less dangerous drug, the Associated Press has learned. A historic shift to generations of American drug policy that could have wide ripple effects across the country. The DEA's proposal, which still must be reviewed by the White House Office of Management and Budget, would recognize the medical uses of cannabis and acknowledge it has less potential for abuse than some of the nation's most dangerous drugs. However, it would not legalize marijuana outright for recreational use. The agency's move, confirmed to the AP on Tuesday by five people familiar with the matter, who spoke on the condition of anonymity to discuss the sensitive regulatory review, clears the last significant regulatory hurdle before the agency's biggest policy change in more than 50 years can take effect. Once OMB signs off, the DEA will take public comment on the plan to move marijuana from its current classification as a Schedule 1 drug alongside heroin and LSD. It moves pot to Schedule 3 alongside ketamine and some anabolic steroids, following a recommendation from the Federal Health and Human Services Department. After the public comment period and a review by an administrative judge, the agency would eventually publish the final rule. It comes after President Joe Biden called for a review of federal marijuana law in October 2022 and moved to pardon thousands of Americans convicted federally of simple possession of the drug. He has also called on governors and local leaders to take similar steps to erase marijuana convictions. Quote, criminal records for marijuana use and possession have imposed needless barriers to employment, housing, and educational opportunities, end quote, Biden said in December. Quote, too many lives have been upended because of our failed approach to marijuana. It's time that we right these wrongs, end quote. The election year announcement could help Biden, a Democrat, boost flagging support, particularly among younger voters. Biden and a growing number of lawmakers from both major political parties have been pushing for the DEA decision as marijuana has become increasingly decriminalized and accepted, particularly by younger people. A Gallup poll last fall found 70% of adults support legalization, the highest level yet recorded by the polling firm, and more than double the roughly 30% who backed it in 2000. Schedule 3 drugs are still controlled substances and subject to rules and regulations, and people who traffic in them without permission could still face federal criminal prosecution. Some critics argue the DEA shouldn't change course on marijuana, saying rescheduling isn't necessary and could lead to harmful side effects. Jack Riley, a former deputy administrator of the DEA, said he had concerns about the proposed change because he thinks marijuana remains a possible, quote, gateway drug, end quote, one that may lead to use of other drugs. Quote, but in terms of us getting clear to use our resources to combat other major drugs, that's a positive, end quote, Riley said, noting that fentanyl alone accounts for more than 100,000 deaths in the U.S. a year. On the other end of the spectrum, others argue marijuana should be treated the way alcohol is. Last week, 21 Democrats led by Senate Majority Leader Senator Chuck Schumer of New York sent a letter to DEA Administrator Ann Milgram and Attorney General Merrick Garland arguing marijuana should be dropped from the controlled substances list and instead regulated like alcohol. Quote, it is time for the DEA to act, end quote, the lawmakers wrote. Quote, right now the administration has the opportunity to resolve more than 50 years of failed racially discriminatory marijuana policy, end quote. Federal drug policy has lagged behind many states in recent years, with 38 having already legalized medical marijuana and 24 legalizing its recreational use. That's helped fuel fast growth in the marijuana industry, with an estimated worth of nearly $30 billion. Easing federal regulations could reduce the tax burden that can be 70% or more for businesses, according to industry groups. It could also make it easier to research marijuana, since it's very difficult to conduct authorized clinical studies on Schedule 1 substances. The immediate effect of rescheduling on the nation's criminal justice system would likely be more muted, since federal prosecutions for simple possession have been fairly rare in recent years. Critics point out that as a Schedule 3 drug, marijuana would remain regulated by the DEA. That means the roughly 15,000 cannabis dispensaries in the U.S. would have to register with DEA, like regular pharmacies, and fulfill strict reporting requirements, something that they are loath to do and that the DEA is ill-equipped to handle.
Enrolling in Medicare When Laid Off by Tony King. Hello, Tony. My husband, Stephen, has been laid off from a company he worked with for over 20 years. His employer is downsizing due to changes in the economy, and May 31st will be his last day. Steve is 68, enrolled in Medicare Part A, but never enrolled in Medicare B because he had employer benefits. He is stressed, wondering how to apply for Medicare Part B properly to avoid receiving a penalty. I am turning 65 in September and also will need to enroll in Medicare. Please explain what our Medicare enrollment options are since we are different ages and have different enrollment situations. Thanks. Tony responds, there are two different rules regarding enrolling in Medicare Parts A and B in your household, and I will keep how to enroll in Medicare for both you and Steve simple. Below are Medicare enrollment rules. 1. Past 65, leaving employer benefits and the simple way to enroll in Medicare Part B. Steve needs to apply for a special enrollment period, SEP, by downloading the form CMS-L564, Request for Employment Information, and CMS-40B, Application for Enrollment in Medicare Part B, from ssa.gov, forms or email info@tonysays.com, and the Tony Says Medicare team will email you a form. Have Steve's Human Resources Department sign off on the CMS-L564, Request for Employment Information, form and attach it to CMS-40B. Under item number 9, Remarks on the CMS-40B, write what month Part B should begin. Steve's start is June the 1st, 2024. File both forms with the local Social Security office. Advise the SS representative that Steve is losing his company benefits and needs his Medicare Part B to begin June 1st, since his last day of employment is May 31st. Make copies of every document given and received from the SS office. Now, secondly, you are turning 65, not receiving your Social Security check, and enrolling in Medicare. Your way of enrolling in Medicare is simple and quite different from Steve's because you are turning 65 in September. Go online to www.ssa.gov/Medicare/signup at least 90 days prior to turning 65 and apply online for a September 1st effective date. Third, turning 65 and receiving your Social Security check. You're welcome to Medicare kit with your Medicare card will arrive via mail 90 days prior to turning 65. Chapter 1 of Tony's Medicare Survival Guide Advanced Edition explains in detail how to enroll in Medicare the right way. Below is information regarding Medicare parts and options. 1. Original Medicare Part A, hospital insurance, covers inpatient hospital stays, skilled nursing / rehab stay, home health, and hospice. 2. Original Medicare Part B, medical insurance, covers primary care or specialist physicians, whether in the office or performing surgery, outpatient surgery, durable medical equipment, X-rays, CAT scans, MRIs, chemotherapy, etc. 3. Original Medicare or Medicare Advantage. Discuss with your healthcare facilities and medical professionals which Medicare plans they accept, such as original slash traditional Medicare with a Medicare supplement, or a Medicare Part C Medicare Advantage plan such as HMO, PPO, or PFFS. If you are considering a Medicare Advantage plan, research the plan's hospital slash provider online directory to be sure your physicians and hospitals are in that specific plan network. Verify they are currently in the network. Fourth, Medicare prescription drug plan. Research the plans every year to see if your standalone prescription drug or Medicare Advantage plan with prescriptions formulary covers all your brand name or generic prescription drugs. Fifth, long-term care. Research options such as LTC policies, hybrid annuities, or life insurance with LTC riders, new short-term care plans, or specific states' Medicaid rules for long-term care needs. Don't forget with Medicare, it's what you don't know that will hurt you. Tony's new Confused About Medicare video series explaining Medicare is available at tonisays.com. For a Medicare checkup, call 832-519-8664 or email info@tonysays.com. SIBO symptoms fail to improve. Dear Dr. Roach, I was diagnosed with small intestinal bacterial overgrowth, SIBO, by my gastroenterologist over 3 years ago. I was tested using the tube method. I followed a diet the day before, then blew into tubes the day of. I am so bloated that I cannot wear any of my clothes because I look as though I'm ready to deliver a baby any minute. I was put on several antibiotics, including rifaximin, none of which help. I also followed the low FODMAP diet. I was only supposed to follow it for 6 weeks, then wean myself off. However, I'm still following the diet. I am glucose and lactose free, and I still have absolutely no relief. I am taking pantoprazole. I have been tested for celiac disease, but I'm okay there. I'm at my wit's end and was wondering if there was anything you could recommend. Answer by Dr. Roach. SIBO, S-I-B-O, is when large amounts of bacteria from the mouth and colon are present in the small intestine. This can cause the primary symptom of bloating, but can also cause excess gas, diarrhea, and abdominal discomfort in some people. In severe cases, it can stop the person from being able to absorb nutrients, leading to weight loss and nutritional deficiencies. The diagnosis is most commonly made by a breath test, the tube method you mentioned, which looks for hydrogen and methane. Antibiotics will usually improve symptoms. Since it didn't in your case, reconsideration of the diagnosis is appropriate, and either a repeat breath test or a different diagnostic test, such as a duodenal aspirate to look at bacterial counts, should be considered. If the diagnosis remains SIBO, but there isn't any improvements in symptoms, there are additional treatments, such as an elemental diet. But most importantly, your doctor should try to understand why you have SIBO in the first place. The pantoprazole you are taking prevents your stomach from making acid. Without acid, MAF bacteria can go into the intestine. I would certainly ask your gastroenterologist about retreatment and stopping the pantoprazole, if possible. Finally, medicines to enhance the movement of the intestine can be helpful for some people whose underlying cause is poor intestinal movement. You can write to Dr. Keith Roach, R-O-A-C-H, at P.O. Box 536475, Orlando, Florida 32853-6475. Dear Abby, I am a lesbian who recently experienced heartbreak by falling in love with my mentor and boss. I didn't want it to happen, but it did. This time we spent together was a balance of bliss and fear. My heart and soul feel that she feels the same way about me. I left my job because my feelings for her became so overwhelming I could no longer cope. She knows how I feel about her, and she has shown interest in me in the past. She is not gay, but I do know of straight women who have fallen in love with one woman in their lives. We have a 15-year age difference. That doesn't matter to me. I'm absolutely crazy about her. I dream about our Victorian home together and a beautiful garden and life. I want nothing else but to make her happy for the rest of her life, make her breakfast every morning and beautiful dinners every night. We are no longer communicating upon her request. I want to heal my heart and live my life. It's so hard to let go of her, but I know I should. On the other hand, something tells me I should wait for her. How can I move forward and find the love I deserve in this life? Signed, Crushed in California. Dear Abby responds, Dear Crushed, if you really want to find the love you know you deserve, then you are going to have to find someone who is ready and willing to provide it. This person is not. She was interested in you only as a friend and an employee. Asking you to stop communicating with her was a strong message. It may take time and even psychological counseling to help you disengage from your fantasy of an ideal life with this woman. But for the sake of your sanity, it is important that you try. And another dear Abby, my son got his girlfriend pregnant. She already has a 7-year-old by another man. Her mother kicked her and the baby out right after the baby was born. She had no other place to go, so I had her child, and my grandbaby stay with my husband and me. What a big mistake that was. All we asked of her was to clean up a little bit around the house. She lives here rent-free. She buys her food and will cook sometimes for herself and her children, but she leaves the pots and pans and dishes for me to do. She won't lift a finger to do any other household chores. She works only part-time, and I watch both kids when my son can't. Am I wrong to be angry that she won't help out? Signed, Doing It All in Pennsylvania. Dear Abby responds, Dear Doing It, I'm glad you asked. This appears to be an example of no good deed goes unpunished. That said, you are wrong to be angry at your son's girlfriend. You should be angry at yourself for tolerating her selfish behavior. She and your son should be working toward being independent. They are a family now. Lay down the law to your son and this young woman. Tell them exactly what you expect of them. And if they don't comply, they will have to make other living arrangements. Then enforce the rules. If you do, you will be doing all of you a favor. You can write to Dear Abby at P.O. Box 69440, Los Angeles, California, 90069, or visit www.dearabby.com.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.